My name is Mia Ferraletto. Welcome to my very first show with animal communicator David Lewis. I'd like to thank Whitley for giving me this opportunity to interview people whose work I find particularly of interest and also of benefit to the general population at this important time where we're all growing and transitioning to a new way of being with ourselves and with each other. And when I mention each other, I'm not talking about just the human race, but all species. David Lewis is an animal communicator whose mission is to bring you and your animals together through extraordinary means to facilitate healing, happiness, and improved communication. David founded Talk to Your Animals in 2001. He has studied and taught interspecies communication extensively with the finest teachers available, most notably Penelope Smith. He has assisted Penelope with her workshops at Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health and the Omega Institute. David has been a personal friend of mine and all of my animals for 20 years. And David, I welcome you here today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Mia.
So can you share with everyone how you got involved in such a unique and amazing career and gift, how it all began?
Well, my spiritual awakening really started in my 30s, in the late 80s. And during that time, I began to seriously pursue the use of intuition and intuitive development and psychic abilities and whatnot. And I was studying that pretty seriously when I discovered that there was a movement that worked on that level with animals. And I was so taken by it that I just went full speed in that direction and studied everywhere I could. I studied at Spring Farm Cares in Clinton, New York, a wonderful animal sanctuary. And then I studied with Penelope, took all her courses and traveled out to California to, you know, spend time with her in classes. And just, I found it came very easily once I started. It just, you know, I knew that it was for me because as soon as I started, it just started happening right away. So I was working professionally before I was even done studying. You know, I kept studying and I'm still learning all the time. I learn fascinating things all the time just from talking to animals and the things they have to tell me.
They must have a completely different perspective than our own as far as what's going on the planet right now. Just thinking about the kangaroo and the little koala bears in Australia trying to survive these fires and their experience watching their whole worlds collapse due to most likely man-made carelessness in terms of the environment and many other factors, of course.
Do you find
that watching them, for instance, are you picking up messages from the animals why these natural disasters are happening?
Well, the main message that I pick up, you know, it's kind of unusual maybe to think this, but I mean, other than there's a lot of grief there, but the grief is, what I really pick up from the animals is that this is just part of the cycle that, you know, that they signed on for, that this is, you know, humanity is working out its problems on a grand scale, and they're not worried about becoming extinct or anything like that. There's a great deal of suffering on the physical level, but on the spiritual level, they see this as part of the growth for humanity because of the there has been a great deal of attention given to the animals. In fact, I would say from my following the media coverage on the fires is that there's more attention given to the animals than there are to the displacement of people, than there is to that, to the displacement of people.
It's so interesting to see the koala. Yeah, and I've seen clips of the koalas actually asking for help. You know, asking for water to drink, asking, you know, for medical attention.
Yeah, sure.
So you had a particularly close relationship with my six dogs, the pack that I was blessed to live with for almost 14 years. And they always got so excited when they knew that you were coming over to visit. Do you have any stories you'd like to share regarding things that happened particularly with them?
Well, that happened in the past with us, you mean?
Yes. For instance, one that comes to mind was the time, and this was early on when we had first met, when Jasper was suffering from some very hard to identify illness. The vet could not find anything wrong, yet he was becoming weaker and weaker by the day, and 110-pound young dog could not even jump up on the couch, and it turned out that it was related to a past life event and Sam joining our household, a Chow Shepherd mix, Sammy, coming to live with us. Do you remember that specifically?
Yes, I do.
Jasper?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, they very much like people. They carry in what's left over, you know, from a past life, and you know, a lot of energy is spent, especially with those that are, you know, rescues or abandoned. You know, they have their stuff to work out, and it was, you know, amazing what happened with Jasper.
Just so the audience knows, he had been put down by his previous owner in another life because he was a hunting dog and he had failed. And when Sam came to live with us, he felt that it was, again, a failure situation, so he was just giving up.
And I find in my work, you know, when I discover that sort of thing, it's not unusual at all. In fact, I was just working with a feral cat the other day who is FIV positive and really had one foot in each world, one foot in the spirit world and one foot in the earth world. And was not clear about whether he wanted, was going to be able to pull it off, was going to be able to stay, and it was kind of giving up. And, you know, by having a communication with him and encouraging and teaching his caretaker to be sort of a cheerleader for him, you know, he's turning around. And it's, you know, very, very similar to the way you would treat a child or another human being. You know, you give them the support and the love that they need, and it helps them get through, you know, what they have to deal with.
In, you know, over the past year, are there any cases, any particular animals that you worked with that you found to be particularly unusual and timely in terms of this particular place we find ourselves you know, 2019 moving into 2020. You know, I know that you deal with a lot of behavioral issues, but are you noticing more soul issues, for lack of a better word, in terms of, you know, more profound issues that the animals are raising with you when you go to work with them?
Well, I find particularly when I work with animals in spirit that this is the case, because they, you know, they often, they've been reassigned in a sense. They, as they enter the other realms, they become champions of certain qualities of being that they radiate to the planet, that are in, that we're in need of receiving. They become champions of other animals, helping animals, helping spirits incarnate as animals, and like that. So that's where the most profound things I think come from. I did have an encounter I'll tell you about though, which was really fascinating to me because, you know, I'm a vegetarian and, I was contacted by a woman, a middle-aged woman and her husband, and they have a small farm. They were raising sheep, and their idea was they were going to raise sheep so that they could, have them slaughtered and use the meat to feed, to be healthy, feed for dogs and cats. Okay. And they felt that if they raised them lovingly and with a higher consciousness, that this would, provide food for domestic animals that would be of a higher quality, which all sounds good. But I went and talked to the sheep, and it was very interesting because I got a variety of responses. One of the females told me that she did not want to be slaughtered. She wanted to have more babies, and that, you know, she would provide sheep for them to slaughter, but she wanted to be a mother and continue to be a mother for a while. I had a male say that, well, that's fine, but not yet. I want to have more sex first. And I had, and a number of them, the majority of them felt that it was perfectly fine. They understood their relationship, you know, as part of the circle of life, you know, to use a cliche. And one even told me that he would be honored to be able to be used for food for other animals. And then this couple was sort of making it up. Well, they weren't making it up as they go along. What they were doing was learning. They had never done this before. So they were learning from the internet. They were learning from books, and they were trying their best to, you know, do this in a highly conscious manner. And they had one experience dispatching. That's the word that is used in the animal field there. When you put down an animal for, you know, for food, they call it dispatching. And they had one experience. Yeah. It's an interesting phrase, isn't it?
Where they
personally did slaughter one of the sheep, and it was very traumatic for them. And what was interesting to me, Mia, was that I actually tuned into some of the leftover meat from this sheep. His name was Charlie, and I was able to tune into his body and his essence through a package of frozen leftover meat from his body. And I felt the most beautiful feeling. That he was in truth honored to be in their charge and to be used for the purpose he was being used for. So, you know, it really opened my eyes in terms of the perspective of, you know, being a vegetarian. I've always said that if I had to kill my own meat, I would be a vegetarian. But I know of a number of people who have small farms and are very loving to the animals, and it was an eye opener for me.
That is so interesting. So Charlie felt, it sounds like, that he was sacrificing himself for the good of others and willingly and happily doing so.
Yeah, and being a teacher for the people, too, as well. Yeah, for the couple.
Right. Well, animals are so much more giving. They embody unconditional love in a way that that mankind, I think, finds harder to express. No doubt it's there, too, but animals have a generosity of spirit with each other, and I think the YouTube animal sensation, to be able to go on YouTube and watch all these videos of animals interacting with other species and the extent and depth of their friendships and commitment to each other, it is such an education for everyone. We just don't think of them in that way, but there it is, you know, it's undeniable.
Yeah, you know, we have a caretaking perspective, which is valid in the sense that we, you know, they need us. A domestic animal companion needs their person to take care of them and feed them, but it's, you know, beyond that, there is there's just so much to be gained and learned from opening your heart to who they really are and on all dimensions who they are, and being able to respect them and experience them as equal beings. It's just a life changer, and it's a life changer that we need.
It is.
It's a good place to start. Yeah, excuse me.
So much to learn from them. You actually play a role in one of my favorite stories about the dogs, involving Sammy and Fergus, who was the smallest of the group of six dogs and kind of the troublemaker. And Sammy was really like the Arnold Schwarzenegger of the group. He was kind of the enforcer. And if Fergus was doing something that he really should not be doing, all I would have to say to him was, "Fergie, do you want Sammy to tell you no?" And that was enough. Mm-hmm. He would just stop whatever it was he was doing and turn to something else. But this one particular day, you had come over to visit for lunch, and you had left, and I had forgotten to tell you something, and we were on the phone, and I heard a major correction going on right outside the back door on the deck. So I ran outside, and Sammy had Fergus pinned down and was telling him not to eat the paint turtle that he was about to start chewing into. And watching this, Fergie picked up the turtle, carried it probably 3 acres away down to the pond, put it down by the side of the pond, right at the edge of the water, and ran back up to the house to get ready for dinner. And I've told that story a number of times, and people look at me with, you know, total skepticism. But there's no other explanation. Sammy was telling Fergus not to hurt the turtle.
Of course. Yeah, there's so much interspecies connection that we, I mean, you're seeing it more and more now when you see memes on Facebook or photos or stories. I mean, I just read something the other day that a shark, you know, was assisted by a human who was tangled in something, and this person helped the shark get untangled, and the shark went its way. It didn't attack the person. I mean, it's just, there's an understanding here, you know, among between animal, you know, different species of animal, and between animals and humans, there's beginning to become, I feel very strongly, a sense of the connection, a sense of respect, mutual respect, a sense of gratitude. You hear it all the time about sea life, the whales and the dolphins, and you know, how protected they are of us and how grateful they are when we assist them. So I really feel that that's one of the more positive things that's happening right now, is the deepening connection, between different species of animal, and the awakening consciousness of human beings about the role of animals in their lives, particularly their animal companions.
Well, you will be coming to South Dakota in July for our third conference on consciousness and contact, and you were a speaker at the very first one that we did 2 years ago in Vermont. We held the event at the Verchere Riding School, and Linda Moulton Howe was the main speaker that year, and you and Linda had a profound experience surrounding the death of Linda's beloved cat, Simba. But you also participated with the animals that were living at the Verchere Riding School, which had cows and sheep and goats.
Pigs.
And
I love that the pigs had a race. Had a race, yeah.
Oh, did they?
Wonderful. Yeah, they had I watched them racing. That was great fun. Racing to the fence to see us.
Oh, really? Oh, I missed that somehow.
Yeah.
But, personally, I think that animal communication, interspecies communication also offers us the opportunity of communicating with other beings out in the universe. And I'm curious to know your thoughts on that.
Well, the other beings in the universe that I primarily deal with are the animals that are in spirit, okay?
Uh-huh.
I'm not always clear as to, who gives them their marching orders, but the animals in spirit that I've spoken to, I've had some fascinating encounters. One actually told me that he was a star in the heavens, okay? That was what he was now. I've had others tell me, like I mentioned before, I didn't get into specifics when I said it earlier, but let me say that when you talk about qualities of being, like power or strength, resilience, peace, unconditional love, things like this, an animal, a dog or a cat or a reptile or a bird will say, this is what I'm doing now. I'm radiating the quality of peace. And in many instances, probably most instances, when they're doing this, these were qualities that they embodied in their physical form before they passed, okay? And so they continue. For instance, a very strong, think of a dog like a German Shepherd, who you think of as strong and disciplined. Well, that German Shepherd passes over and continues to radiate the qualities of strength and discipline to the earth for everybody, not just for other animals, but for people, because we need balance. We need to balance the thoughts, the feelings, the emotions, the behaviors of human beings so that we all survive. And the animals are very, very dedicated to this. And then often I've had a situation where a female Sheltie had passed, and she showed me that her job was to prepare the spirits that were about to incarnate as Sheltie puppies. And the picture she showed me, it was very sweet. It was like a mom sending their kids off to school for the first day, handing them their bag lunch, patting them on the butt, and sending them to the bus, That's what she was doing. That was her job. It's so varied, the experiences that they have in spirit. I really feel that it's a combination of their desire, their ability, and the need that, the perceived need at the time, at whatever time they cross over. And, that's fluid. That can change. The needs of the moment, can be very fluid and change. Particularly the almost entrancing qualities of being that they feel, and I agree, are needed on the planet. They they will radiate those beams, the solidity, almost like rock, the solidity of purpose and intention and of presence, of powerful presence, that some animals will radiate that.
Well, I can tell you for sure, my six dogs, most of whom lived to be 14 years of age, my two horses, Bailey and Rusty, and my cats, Charlie and Webster, surrounded me with unconditional love during a time in my life where I was connecting to my own spiritual gifts and my own role in the world in terms of the contribution that I am trying to make here at this moment in time. And for certain, I would not have gotten through all that I've gone through had it not been for the extraordinary support and guidance that they provided in my life. And of course, they're all still around me, even still. But I cannot stress enough the power of the unconditional love that they provided and the wisdom, the animal wisdom of learning how to live in the present, live in the moment, not worry about the past and not project into the future.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, an extraordinary pack. And there was a sense of unity among them, despite some of the, you know, disagreements and occasional issues that would come up. There was a real, to me, in my experience, as I recall, it was just such a clear sense of unity in terms of their purpose and what they were here for and what they were doing, not just for you, but for anybody that encountered them.
Oh, absolutely. As you know, there were two red dogs, two black dogs, and two white dogs, and they would feng shui themselves, not only according to color, but to gender. They would lie down. It was hysterical to watch them. But they really took care of each other.
Yeah, and you and whoever they encountered, I think. I'm a greater person and a better person for my opportunity to have been their friend for a while.
Well, I think particularly at that moment in time, I do believe that they contributed to the acceptance on an energetic level, you know, that animals were more than what they, you know, what we had preconceived of them to be, that there was far more going on than, you know, than the traditional roles that they had been playing.
Yes, and the turn of the century was a real important time for that. A real important part in our history for, I think, the quantum leap in terms of the consciousness of people regarding animals. I mean, you had Sonia, the pet psychic on Animal Planet, and I think that just the fact that there is interest, there's still a lot of skepticism, but there is interest in what I do, and there are probably several thousand people around the world doing the same kind of thing, and it's fluid again. It moves. It changes. I've really come to focus on emotional healing. It just sort of was led in that direction. So, for me, it's very important to deal with not just the past life, but the current life situations of an animal that was abused or abandoned and then is rescued and is living a life, you know, filled with trauma. And I've had a great deal of wonderful experiences in doing that, that, have brought healing like my mission is, that just sort of evolved, I guess, over the years.
Well, I just saw a YouTube video a couple of days ago about a 16-year-old collie whose owners brought it to the shelter because they didn't want to take care of it anymore. And this had been the family pet for all those years, and they were giving it up. And luckily, a good foster home was found for the dog, who's now happily ensconced on the leather sofa in the family room. But it's extraordinary to me to think that someone could live with their dog for all those years and then just get rid of it.
Clearly, an unconscious person whose understanding of the relationship was not very evolved. That's what I would say. You know, that would be my initial response to that story. It's just obviously someone who felt that at some level they could just discard this other being. You know, there's a lot of the consciousness raising that's going on about the relationship between domestic animals, pets, if you will, and their people, has to do with forever homes and, you know, the idea that adoption is forever and that you don't, you don't just cast off, somebody, you know, no more than you would cast off a human member of your family. Although there are people that do that as well. So again, it's about raising the consciousness and that's an ongoing process, but I do think we've made leaps and bounds in the last 20 years since you and I have known each other.
I agree with you completely. I can also say that living with the dogs in particular, they would work as a group to send healing energy to other dogs that were injured or sick. There's one particular example where I had been called to go over to do energy work for a 13 or 14-year-old terrier who'd been run over by a truck, and his spleen was broken. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, he couldn't walk or stand even. And after a couple of hours of his mother and I working on him, he was able to stand, and the vet had been very concerned that he would not be able to eliminate, you know, either way, but particularly bowel movements. But I had gotten the guidance that by 9 o'clock at night he would be outside doing his business. But when I got home, I went down to the pond with the dogs, and they all, as a group, were sending him, his name was Spencer, sending Spencer their energy. And sure enough, his mother called and said at 9 o'clock he was outside pooping in the backyard. So, and healed very quickly.
Yeah, it's amazing what just, well, it's, you know, it's like what's happening everywhere, particularly, you know, we think of it mostly with people, but it's amazing that it's the same process, really, psychologically or physically. The healing process works well for animals, you know, as well.
Well, they're so receptive, you know. That's the interesting thing that I found doing energy work with animals. They just soak it up. They're so receptive, you know, whereas we as people have blocks that keep us from being open or, you know, sharing our true thoughts or feelings or even opening ourselves up on an energetic level. But the animals, because they're so present, are just so open and receptive to positive elements coming at them.
Sure, they generally are. I will say, however, though, that there are trust issues sometimes with animals that have been abused or neglected or abandoned that I have had to encounter in my work, where I'll tune in to talk with a dog or a cat and I'll feel resistance from them, and I have to kind of earn their trust, and it doesn't take much. It just takes having an open heart and talking to them on their level. Excuse me. But that kind of breaches that gap for them so that they realize that they can trust me.
And then they know when you're telling them the truth. You know, they know when you're being sure. honest with them, which is, I always trust, if I have questions about a person, I always trust an animal to inform confirm my intuitions, because they always know what somebody's about.
Sure. Sure, they do.
So, do you work primarily in person, or do you connect with animals over the internet and phone? Can you talk a little bit about your process?
Excuse me, yeah. These days there's been less in-person work, and it's a lot more telephone work. And some internet work. I worked with a woman in Brazil. And I have another one who's waiting to schedule something with me, someone from Brazil. And I used to Skype a lot, people in Austria and London and Northern Canada, up in Alexandria, or not Alexandria Bay, what the Thunder Bay, I guess, Ontario. So there's a lot of phone work. Some people will say, well, I want you to come out to the house, because they feel that it would be, they feel somehow that it would be less effective if they just did it over the telephone. And that's not true in my experience. It's really not true. I enjoy more, seeing the animals in person. So I love to come to the house because, it's one thing just to tune into them energetically or to tune in to them through a photograph. But, I love their company. So, it's been a lot of phone work lately. And, I like to use pictures. I don't have to if somebody really doesn't have the technology to be able to send me a picture. I mean, that's kind of rare, but I do encounter some elderly people who don't have access to the kind of technology to be able to send me an email or a text message with a photo. And I just work from their description. It's all part of the mix. All the energy, it's just part of the mix, and it's there for the asking. It's like the old biblical injunction, ask and you shall receive. And I work with the energy of St. Francis a lot, too. Sort of takes me back to my early tradition. I was raised as a Catholic, and I did have a connection. I felt as a teenager I developed a connection with St. Francis. For all that he was, his rejection of wealth and material possessions, and his love for the animals, his ability to do healing with the animals, and I invoke his spirit on a regular basis, and just in working with my goal of bringing harmony and healing to whatever situation I'm called to participate in.
Well, St. Francis is a wonderful saint to connect with. I too was raised Catholic, and I feel a strong affinity to him and to his work, and actually have some dear friends who are three Franciscan fathers who run the St. Francis Residences for the Poor in New York City. And when I go in there, I stay at the monastery with them, but they've focused on working with the homeless of New York and have done extraordinary work. But St. Francis was amazing and way ahead of his time in terms of communicating with animals.
Oh, yeah. I did, there's a, up north from me a little bit, I did pass a couple of times, a veterinary practice. It's the name, the St. Francis of Assisi Animal Hospital. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's neat. Do you happen to know anything about them? Do they have an animal communicator on staff?
I don't know. actually, they're way up in Scaticook, which is a couple of hours from me, and I never, the times that I've been passing by there was never hours that they were open. So, and it just kind of fell by the wayside. I should check them out. I'm sure they have a website. I should check them out and see what they're up to. But
it would be interesting to know.
Yeah.
Well, since we're here having this conversation, do you have any particular messages or something that one of my guys would like me to know about?
Yeah. Give me just a second here, and I'm feeling Sammy has something to say. And what Sammy wants to do is to congratulate you on the work that you're doing. He feels that he feels that the time that he spent with you and the pack was, in a sense, a preparation for you. Part of what was occurring was a preparation for you to be able to be doing the higher level of work that you're about now. And he says, in a sense, congratulations, and also thank you very deeply. He really feels gratitude for what it is that you're part of.
Oh, well, thank you, Sammy. Thank you, David. I love you so completely. It brings me to share how Sammy came to live with us, which is quite a story in itself. I got his picture on the internet the day he was going to be euthanized in West Virginia, and he was a Chow Shepherd mix. He looked like a lion. He was red with a black face and a spotted Chow Chow tongue. And I called and said I would adopt him, and this doggy Underground Railroad brings dogs from West Virginia all the way up to Providence, Rhode Island, stopping along the way, dropping off dogs to foster parents or adopters a couple of times a month. And I picked him up in Connecticut and brought him to our wonderful vet. And I was paying the bill, and I'd asked someone to hold on to his leash, and they did not, and he got loose and ran out of the vet's office and was missing for 6 weeks. So he'd managed to make it up to Columbia County, New York, from West Virginia, and then was running around the countryside. And I had one photo of him from the rescue group in West Virginia, and made posters and put them up all over within a couple-hour radius. And I would get phone calls saying, Sammy's out in the cornfield. Sammy's, you know, at the neighbors. And Sammy's here. And by the time I'd get there, he'd always be gone. And on a Saturday night, I was sitting with friends in a barn where he had been seen the day before, hoping he would show up for a bowl of food. And I sat there and said aloud to the air, Sammy, go to somebody's house who has dogs and stay there so I can come and get you. This was 6 weeks after he had arrived in New York State. And it's 10:30 the next night, and this lovely woman, Gail, called me to tell me that she had seen the poster in Dairy Queen and had gone over there at 10:30 at night with her flashlight to get my phone number. Sam had shown up in her boyfriend Lou's backyard with his two dogs and was in the doghouse with them. And I called Lou, and he said, give me a week of feeding everybody and twice a day, and one day I'll open the kitchen door and they'll all walk in together. And that's exactly what happened after a week. So that's how Sammy came to live with us.
Wow, that's quite a story. Yeah, I can sense two things as you talk about that, and I've never spoken to him about that. But as you talk about that, I get two messages from him regarding that. And one was just a natural curiosity to explore that he had after being cooped up, so to speak, for a long time, what felt to him like a long time. And he there was a part of him that just didn't want to settle in, that just wanted to see what there was to be seen. And then the other thing was, I think that he was, there was a little bit of a trust issue. He knew where he was supposed to end up, but he wasn't sure it was with you. He had to go out and test the waters a little bit before he was certain that you were the one that he was supposed to be with. That's what he's telling me.
Well, it took him a year to smile. It took him a year to be relaxed enough to smile. Mm. And the truth is, he fell in love with Jasper. They bonded. He fell in love with Jasper, and he fell in love with Daisy. He had such a crush on Daisy, who was afraid of him. He would gingerly pull on her back leg, inviting her to play with him, and just grin and wag his tail at her. But she was intimidated by him, and Fergus and she were the same size and wrestled together all the time. And all Sammy wanted was to wrestle with Daisy. Mm-hmm. But he and Jasper were absolutely best buddies. And his friendship with Jasper is what kept him there, because he would have been gone regardless of the invisible fence or anything else. He would have been gone had he not wanted to stay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, is there anything else, David, that you'd like to share with us in terms of your work?
Well, I'll tell you what. As we're talking here, a story from my own past over the last couple of decades comes to mind that I just want to share. And it has to do with a couple of cats. And one was the cat that I consider my soulmate, cat Ringo, who was probably just a few years old at the time. And my wife has always had an affinity for Siamese cats. And so she wanted to adopt a Siamese. She did. She found a seal point that had been rescued. And she went to Massachusetts and brought him back, named him Julian. And we found out that Julian, we had everything in order except the medical report when she brought him back. And that was on a Saturday afternoon. And on Monday, they contacted us with the medical report, and turned out that he was in renal failure. And they were very apologetic. They said, we'll take him back if you want. And we said, well, no, we'll just provide him hospice care for the amount of time he has. And some of the other cats were not very receptive to him. And that's sometimes what happens. They, you know, one of them would hiss at him, said he smells funny. But Ringo, we kept him in our bedroom. We had a gate, and we put food and litter and water in the bathroom, and we kept him with us. And Ringo was the only one who would interact with him. Ringo would jump the gate. And Ringo liked to hang out in the bedroom anyway, because that's where my office was. But he would hang out with Julian. And we had special food for special kidney food for Julian, and we began to notice that Ringo was helping consume the food. So I had a talk with him about it and explained that it was Julian's food, and he had a very interesting response. He said, "Well, you know," he says, "we're the only ones that come in this room, so I don't think of it as Julian's food. I think of it as our food," and I really couldn't argue with that. Interestingly enough, what happened when Julian got very close to his passing, he stopped eating. And at that time, the other thing I almost forgot. Ringo also said, well, you know, I always let him eat first. Okay.
Before anything.
So, and then when it came time for Julian to pass and he stopped eating, Ringo stopped eating the food as well.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a talk about a bond and an understanding and a mutual respect. That's what they had. And the other, at the time, we had a couple of other cats, and they just weren't interested in Julian. And he warmed up to my wife Amy and I, and also to Ringo.
How long was he with you?
Just a few months, really.
Well, what a great way to go. What a great place to find sanctuary at the end of your life.
He was very sweet. He used to lick my head. He smelled terrible. He'd climb into bed. He'd climb. Amy, for some reason he had the understanding. He understood that Amy didn't want him in bed when she was there. So she would get up before me. And Julian would jump up on the bed and climb up to me and start licking the side of my head, licking my hair, with this awful breath. And soaking my head, and that was just his thing. That's what he did, and I loved it. Every day I waited for it, and as soon as Amy got out of the bed, he jumped in and came right up and started. So that was our relationship for a while, for as long as he was able to maintain himself on the planet in the physical form. So
you were his boy.
Yeah, grooming me.
They're just all so unique in terms of how they express their feelings and attachments. It's such a gift. I have noticed talking to people, just people out there, that unless you've had a close relationship with an animal, it's very hard for you to understand why people feel the way they do about their animals.
Yeah.
Because, it's just foreign. And so many things like being bitten by a dog or kicked by a horse. There are so many factors from childhood that can influence a person deciding, not to have animals in their lives in any form, but it's a whole, it's a dimension that is so beneficial once you allow it in.
Oh, sure. Do we have time for another quick story? Or?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, it just reminded me that I have a friend named Maxwell. He's a golden retriever, and he first came to me. His mom brought him to me because he had some physical issues. And then what happened is that he belonged to a couple who had a daughter who had just given birth, and they were living in the house with them. And so there was this toddler around, and Maxwell used to growl at her. And they were very concerned. And I had a talk with Max, and what Maxwell told me was that he really didn't know what to do with this creature. He didn't understand. Who was she? What's she doing here? And what am I supposed to do? And I explained to him that she was a person that was going to grow up and be big like the other people around him. And I also explained to him that if he were to scare her, that it might scar her in a way that she might never be able to appreciate and have a loving experience of being close to a dog. And I told him, I said, well, your job is to take care of her, to look after her. And, sometimes I always tell people that sometimes it takes a day or so or a good nap, a good night's sleep or a nap, to kind of integrate the work that I'm doing because, it's working on a cellular level. So what, as I was told from Marianne, the dog's mom, she said that he growled at her once that night and then the next morning they became best friends. And
great.
Now the little girl is 5. Maxwell is 8 now. He was a puppy. He was a few years old, but still very puppyish. But the little girl is now 5. Maxwell is 8, and they're inseparable. The little girl and her mom moved out, so they don't even live with Maxwell. But the little girl tells everyone that she has a dog, and they celebrate his birthday everywhere. Every year she makes him birthday cards. He had a little surgery and she made him a get well card. They have tea parties. They play hide and seek. And he's never far from her whenever she's around.
That's great.
It's amazing what a little communication will do.
It is amazing. And it's also amazing too that the people that they live with, are not quiet enough, you know, to hear what is actually happening, you know, what's being communicated. Have you advised people to just sit still, you know, sitting with their pet or, you know, petting them or grooming them and just seeing if, you know, images or words start to come to them? Like, is that part of your visit when you go to do an on-site consult? Do you encourage people go ahead.
I very often explain to people the process and encourage them to try the process. But just the presence, even if they're not actively seeking information or conversation, just the presence is so much that I very often encourage them to just be present with them, particularly when the animals are getting ready to pass, because that creates such a stress and pain for the people that they're at odds. They don't know what to do. They want to do the best they can, and they get very anxious. And over and over and over again, the animals tell me, just be with me. Just be with me. Be present with me.
Right.
Don't try to fix it. I'm dying. Don't try to fix it. You know, I'm going to die. Be present with me, talk to me, think, you know, reminisce about the times we've had over the years, you know, tell me stories about the things we did and it just makes their passage so much easier.
So true. Beautifully said. Well, David, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, I have a website, and it's www.talktoyouranimals, just the way it sounds, talktoyouranimals.co, not com. Everybody, you know, thinks it's a typo, but it's not. It's www.talktoyouranimals.co. Okay? And I also can be reached by telephone at area code 518-892-9161. And there's an email through the website that you can contact me on, and I do a lot of long-distance work, like I mentioned before, so anybody can contact me from anywhere.
That's fantastic. And you and Whitley Strieber and Linda Moulton Howe and Barbara Lamb and Rebecca Hardcastle-Wright and a number of other people will be speaking at our third conference on consciousness and contact in Wasta, South Dakota, July 23rd through the 27th, which is going to be a very exciting weekend for everybody.
Wonderful,
there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reuniting with some old friends from the first conference and meeting some new friends. So.
Yeah, it'll be great. We'll be on the edge of the Badlands National Park, so the land is so powerful, and it will be a great group of people for 4 days. So I'm looking forward to seeing you there.
You bet.
Well, thank you so much. Yes.
Of course,
me too.
Mia. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's great. Great to
My
be your
pleasure.
First, show.
Yeah. This is the very first show. So thank you.
Wonderful. Good luck with all the rest of them.